Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
A lot of questions about him prior to today, and the thing that I knew that he would give us is compete. And there's no doubt in my mind. I haven't been around him that long, but I know the fibers of the kid. I know how he's directed. I know how he thinks. I know how he attacks. And it felt like we had a chance today with him on the mound, as I do with all of them. But it was just one of those situations that you're asking a young man to come into a situation that he has been in before, and he did a very nice job.
First one, whenever it comes to that and I'm worried about it, I just think about my team and I think about, yeah, they're going to hit. They got me if I fail. I remember when I couldn't get through that first inning against TCU. I remember Tennessee. I remember those days like they were yesterday. And to finish here with this team, it's awesome.
Good morning. Welcome to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber. That's 133 and 1133 in high definition. You'd like to give us a call today on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Got a tremendous show lined up for you today. We got not one, but two guests in the third hour, in the 8 o'clock hour, as KLFY Sports Director George Faust will be joining us talking about the impact Raging Cajun longtime baseball coach Tony Robichaux has in the community. We'll also be talking with Connor O'Gara of Saturday Down South, giving us all the latest updates in the world of college football. And in the second hour, we'll have Andrew Lopez on from NOLA.com and the Times-Picayune, breaking down all things New Orleans Pelicans. But right now, we're going to lead off today's show with the College World Series. Game 2 was last night there in Omaha in the championship series between Michigan and Vanderbilt. To set you the stage, Michigan is the Cinderella team of this NCAA postseason for baseball. They were one of the final four teams to get into the tournament. Just to simply get into a regional, they won that regional. Then they went on and win the super regional. And then they had not dropped a game in Omaha for the entire College World Series. They're looking at winning their first national championship in baseball since 1962. They're looking at winning the first national championship in baseball for the Big Ten Conference since 1966. That's when Ohio State won the national championship. They took care of business in Game 1 on Monday night, winning that game 7-4. Tremendous performance by Henry on the mound. And they just scored runs in bunches, two here, two here, two here, one there. Vanderbilt is the perennial powerhouse. They are the recent national champion. They won one a few years ago. They're always in the mix. They started this season ranked either one or number two in the preseason rankings. They are the favorite. And the Commodores played like the favorite last night, anchored by freshman pitcher Kumar Rocker. They forced a deciding final game to determine who will be the 2019 national champion. You heard there in the clip from the young man, Mr. Rocker. He helped the Commodores to a 4-1 win last night. Now, Rocker was not as dominant as he was when, wait for it, he struck out 19 and threw a no-hitter against Duke in the Nashville Super Regional. But he looked very, very good, and he had filthy stuff Tuesday night versus Michigan. He struck out 5 through his first 6 hitters. He set the tone right off the bat. We talked about on yesterday's show that Vandy has been here before. They know what it's at stake. They know how to play under immense pressure in on the biggest stage. And it was a freshman that led them last night, enforcing a decisive game 3 in the championship round of the College World Series. Once again, he struck out the 5 of the first 6 hitters he faced. Rocker ended the night working 6 1/3 innings, gave up 1 run on only 3 hits while striking out 11. That fastball breaking ball combo of his last night, Michigan had no idea what to do with. None whatsoever. He becomes the 9th pitcher in finals history to strike out 10 or more batters in a game, which is surprising. You'd think of all the great matchups over the years that you would have more than just now 9 pitchers striking out 10 or more in one game. But you also have to remember that in the 90s, it was the era of gorilla ball, where it was just batters teeing off on pitches. It was like batting practice more times than not there in Omaha. Rocker did a nice job getting out of jams in the 4th inning when Michigan stole 3 bases in that frame but failed to score a run. He also got out of a minor jam in the 6th before giving the ball over to relief ace Tyler Brown in the 7th. Brown came in, inherited a runner, but still closed it out with 2 2/3 strong innings. It was also a game where Vanderbilt took advantage of Michigan's miscues. Vandy plated a pair of runs in the 5th inning alone on wild pitches. And then they got a big hit from Philip Clark, their catcher, where he notched the first and only home run of the game. It was a laser to right field that increased Vandy's lead to 4 runs. There was a scary moment, though, in last night's game, and that concerns Michigan's designated hitter and leadoff hitter, Jordan Aguo. He appeared to injure his leg while trying to hustle out a ground ball in the 3rd inning. He had to be removed from the game, actually kind of had to be helped up and helped off the field. While he was exiting the field, he was unable to put weight on that right leg of his. And he's a monster for Michigan. This season, he's hit .339 with 14 stolen bases and 23 extra base hits. If he cannot go, if his injury is so severe that he's unable to play in tonight's Game 3, that could be a huge loss for the Wolverines. The decisive Game 3 to decide this year's national champion in collegiate baseball will be tonight on the mothership. Once again, the Wolverines are trying to win their first national title since 1962, while the Commodores are looking to win their first national championship since winning it all back in 2014. And this is why you got to love the fact that the College World Series now is a best of 3 scenario. You go through the elimination part, the double elimination bracket, you get to the championship round, and now you have an opportunity to see 3 games. Because as well as well as Michigan played on Monday night in game one, Vanderbilt played just as well Tuesday night. This is a coin flip. Now it's going to come down to a third and final game. And as baseball fans, there's nothing wrong with that. You get to actually see them duke it out in a best two out of three series there at TD Ameritrade Park in Omaha. And we'll see who will win. Once again, the players on the current roster of Vanderbilt do not know what it takes to win a national championship. They were not part of that team in 2014. But they understand the culture there and the coaches there. And he's going to understand how to get his guys ready and keep them mentally sharp and not be overwhelmed by the moment. Michigan, who is the Cinderella story, who for a lot of folks is probably the team nationally that people are rooting for because they haven't been there and they haven't won it since 1962. And there's also the fatigue of the SEC winning everything and the fatigue of teams from the South region of the United States, ACC and the SEC, always winning these things. Always winning national championships. Plus, no offense to the Commodores, Michigan's a bigger brand, more name recognition. So it's going to be a winner-take-all scenario tonight. Will it be Michigan? Will it be Vanderbilt? Look, and Michigan has had to do it the hard way. During their run, they've had to upset teams left and right. National seeds, higher seeded teams. No one gave them a chance. Hell, no one gave them the chance to even be the team to win a regional game coming out of the Big Ten Conference. Yet, here they are. Just a win away from winning a national championship. But Vandy has been there, but once again, here's the other thing. Vandy had its back against the wall last night, and Kumar Rocker was absolutely phenomenal. But he can't pitch tonight. The young man who threw a no-hitter in the Super Regionals and who struck out double-digit batters last night is not going to be taking the bump for the Commodores tonight. He can't pitch. So, Vandy has talent. They have a wealth of pitching. They'll throw someone out there who's going to be good, who's going to be ready for the moment. But are they going to be able to throw anyone out there that is phenomenal? Like Kumar Rocker was last night, the freshman righty. Probably not. So it'll be interesting to see how this goes down. Vandy, Michigan. Winner take all tonight at Ameritrade Ballpark there in Omaha in the championship round of the College World Series. We'll talk more about this matchup. We'll talk more about this decisive Game 3 coming up tonight in our next break. A tremendous start to the show so far. If you want to give us a call, feel free. Pick up the phone. Dial the ARCO Equipment Hotline in this next segment. 337-706-0111. 337-706-0111. If you want to talk a little College World Series with us. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW. That's the Stadium Network, 32.1. It's 24 hours of over-the-air free sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. You can feel free to give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. We led off today's show talking about the College World Series. Vanderbilt last night did what it needed to do, 4-1 victory to force a decisive Game 3. So does that mean that Michigan is completely out of it? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Because here's the thing. Michigan threw its best pitcher on Monday night. Okay. Tommy Henry threw the 8 1/3 innings on Monday night in that victory, the 7-4 victory to take Game 1. Now, their stud right-handed pitcher, Carl Kauffman, was already penciled in to start the winner-take-all Game 3 if needed. And Criswell, their middle reliever, sometimes closer, was also being saved if needed. So they were unable to beat the young man Kumar Rocker, the freshman phenom for Vanderbilt. But they didn't waste any of their pitchers. So now they got their right-handed guy ready to go, Carl Kauffman, and they got Criswell on the back end. So they got they have a plan. They have one of their second best pitcher and their best relief pitcher ready to go, rested for tonight's championship game. This is what Kauffman had to say about the opportunity to start in a winner-take-all championship game. "Super excited," Kauffman said, "to get a shot to win a national championship, to put your name out there and to help your team do it. Everyone's going to sign their name right there. Incredible opportunity. It's everything I came to Michigan for, dreamed of. So to get that opportunity, I wish we were playing right now." Criswell, meanwhile, he only threw 9 pitches to record the final 2 outs of Monday night's win. It was anticipated that he would be the one to start Game 2. But at a team dinner after the victory, things changed, and Criswell will now be saved to come out of the bullpen tonight. Michigan pitcher Isaiah Page was pulled in the 5th inning last night's game. He did not pitch great. He had some nice moments, but he didn't get the job done. So now they'll turn to their big righty. And Michigan has been, once again, they are the Cinderella team of this NCAA postseason, but they've had to overcome some adversity. Go back to the Big Ten tournament. They won a walk-off game. They won a game in walk-off fashion, rather, over Illinois, which earned their spot in the NCAA tournament. Then they turned around and had to play Nebraska at the very same stadium in front of a partial crowd. And then they survived a pair of elimination games, one against the number one team in the country at their own yard. So they know what it takes. They've had to deal with this before. Once again, this is the same team that beat Creighton in the regional round in 3 games. And then defeated UCLA, the top overall seed in the NCAA tournament in the super regional, in 3 games. Now Michigan, if they want to win their first national championship in baseball since 1962, they'll have to beat Vanderbilt in, guess what, 3 games. Head coach Eric Bocsich said this, quote, "I think it only seems fitting that our team would go to 3 games. That's just been kind of been our MO here in all these rounds. Just feels like we're very comfortable in that spot," end quote. Terrific mindset that this team has. That tells you everything that you need to know right there, because they had to win the regional by defeating an opponent in 3 games. They had to win the Supers by defeating an opponent in three games. Both times, those opponents were higher ranked than them. And now here they are with the top seed, the perennial favorite, a national powerhouse, and they're going to have to do so and beat them in three games. And I like their chances. I do. Yes, you hope Michigan's bats are able to turn things around after getting held to only three hits and one run last night by Rocker from Vanderbilt. And the Wolverines could not get the lead they needed. Because the game plan was they were hoping to get a lead, and then they would call on Jeff Criswell to come in, the sophomore righty, to lead them the rest of the way to get them to the W. But they didn't play good enough baseball. They had the wild pitches. They gave up too many extra base hits. So Criswell was never needed. But now you get to save him. He's the guy that came in and closed the door out in game one. Now he's going to be ready to go. And if your starter goes out there, and if Kaufman can't go, well, you got Criswell that can eat up innings right behind him. So you're essentially, you got two pitchers. You got guys, you essentially have two starters that are ready to go, and you only have one game left. If you're Michigan, that's a great advantage that you have because you have two guys that can come in there and are both raring to go and can give you multiple innings of work. And Vanderbilt won't have any reprieve, so to speak, because Michigan's going to be able to throw not one but two starting pitchers at them. Now, Vandy will be ready. Once again, they've been there before. But there's something about this Michigan team. Once again, they had to fight their way in their own conference tournament just to earn a spot into the NCAA regionals. And then they had to fight their way to win their regional against the likes of Creighton by beating them in three games. And then had to take on the immense task of taking down the Bruins of UCLA in Los Angeles, in the Los Angeles Super Regional. They were able to win that in three games. And then they had not lost an entire game in Omaha until last night. But expect Michigan to bounce back. If I had to make a prediction, I think Big Blue wins it. I think they get the storybook ending for this sensational season. And they'll be the ones taking part in the dog pile around the pitcher's mound later tonight there in Omaha at Ameritrade Ballpark. We got to hit a break, but we got more RP3 and Company coming up here, right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's 24 hours of sports coverage free over the air. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you want to, you can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. We led off today's show talking about the College World Series. Vandy won last night. Even the series at 1-1 championship round, deciding game three tonight there at Ameritrade Ballpark. I like Michigan to win tonight's game. They still got two of their best pitchers left, ready to go, rested. They can throw both of them tonight. I like that. It gives them an advantage. And as I said before, they were able to close out the regional round in upset fashion by beating by playing Creighton three times. They had to do the same thing in the Super Regionals, having to play UCLA three times. They're going to have no problems playing Vanderbilt three times. Would not be surprised if Vandy, out of the SEC, takes care of business. Would not surprise me whatsoever. But I don't know. There's something I like about this Wolverines team, and I like Big Blue to pull out the win tonight and win their first national championship since 1962 in college baseball. But right now I want to talk a little bit about Zion Williamson. We didn't get to it on yesterday's show, but I want to dive in today. A lot of hoopla surrounding the young man out of Duke, the number one overall pick in this year's draft. He's now going to become the face of the franchise for the New Orleans Pelicans. His favorite Marvel character is Thanos, which is revealing to me. I love that. I love the fact that he roots for the villain. But he's got the big smile. He's embraced New Orleans. They're embracing him. The energy level, the hype, the excitement about pro basketball and about him in the city of New Orleans and the state of Louisiana and the entire Gulf Coast is immense right now, as it should be. David Griffin leading the charge out of the front office now with the New Orleans Pelicans. Gail Benson being committed to putting together a championship franchise in New Orleans for basketball. Lots of change, but all these pieces are coming together for the Pels and their fan base. But for all the welcoming that the city of New Orleans has done since Zion was drafted Thursday and starting with his introductory press conference last Friday, and he's been fed and he's been toured the city, and they've had thousands of people show up down on Fulton Street to welcome him, it's a tremendous sight. There's one thing, though, that I found to be the coolest, and that was a gift that he received from a certain New Orleans Saints player. The Pels gave a jolt to New Orleans when they drafted Zion Williamson as expected. And as I said, this comes on the heels of months of change within the organization, trading to send the former longtime face of the franchise, Anthony Davis, to the Los Angeles Lakers. And a number of Saints players have been really excited about the changes going on with the Pels. Cam Jordan comes to mind, and others. Many of them are huge Hoops fans, and they love this new era of basketball down in the Big Easy. And many of them have been quite vocal about it. But one, been kind of quiet, and that was Drew Brees. Brees included a personal message on a jersey that he signed, framed, and was waiting for Zion when he arrived in New Orleans. And included this personal message. To Zion, passing the torch to you, who dat? What I love about that is, if anyone understands the love that New Orleans and the state of Louisiana can give someone, an outsider, would be Drew Brees. You've heard the saying a lot in the last week or so, if you love New Orleans and you love Louisiana, they will love you back. It's just how the state works. It's how it operates. It's part of the fabric of New Orleans and the rest of the state of Louisiana. And once again, Brees is the ultimate outsider. Drew is grew up in Texas. Played college ball in Indiana at Purdue. Began his NFL career in San Diego. Was coming off an injury. Was kind of thrown on the trash heap by the Chargers. The Dolphins thought about signing him. Didn't. He comes to New Orleans, finds a home, and has become part of that community. Has become one of the most, if not the most, beloved figure in New Orleans sports history. And here he is welcoming Zion Williamson and telling him, I'm passing the torch to you now. Not another football player, but to a basketball player. A 19-year-old basketball player, originally from the Carolinas. I love that. Breeze is nearing the end of his career. They're still trying to put a run together to get another Lombardi trophy. And his contract is set to expire after the 2019 season. And look, he could resign for another year. Hell, he could play for another 2 to 3 years, and maybe he continues serving as the face of the franchise. Because as much excitement as there is right now for the Pelicans and Zion Williamson, and it's at an all-time high for pro basketball, probably people have not been this excited about pro ball in the city of New Orleans and the state of Louisiana since Pistol Pete played for the Jazz back in the day. But it's still a Saints city. It's still a Saints state. It's still a Saints region for the Gulf Coast. That said, I love the gesture by Breeze. And apparently Zion loved it and was humbled by it as well. Here's the guy who has been the face of a franchise and, in turn, a face of pro sports in the city of New Orleans post-Katrina. Breeze embraced that role of being the leader of the Saints. He embraced helping the Saints become the team of the state and the region. Because, remember, we like to look at things with rose-colored glasses from time to time. The Saints didn't have sellouts until after Katrina. The tragedy of that hurricane and the devastation of its aftermath and the fact that the Saints had to be vagabonds for a season changed everything. There was no more talks of moving the franchise to San Antonio after that. They were committed to New Orleans. They draft Reggie Bush. They signed Drew Brees. They drafted Marcus Colston. And everything changed. And all of a sudden, the Saints became the heartbeat of the city, even more than just sports. And the city and the state and the rest of the Gulf Coast looked to the Saints. And it's changed just like that. Just like that. Snap of fingers, done. And that's how it happened. And now it feels like, in a less tragic way, but just as organically, you feel this movement with the Pels. Becoming an actual team that the city's going to love and rep. That the region's going to do the same thing. That the state's going to do the same thing. And I think the Saints players see that, and I think Breeze sees that. You know, this wasn't the same situation when they drafted Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis was a number one overall pick. The Saints were already established. That happened during the same time. The reaction is totally different. Now, a lot has to do with the fact that they have basketball people running it. They have a guy who's won a world championship in David Griffin running the front office. They've made tremendous move after tremendous move. Building up that front office, Gail Benson is now committed because she was embarrassed by what took place after the trade demand and how that was such a bad look and how she was embarrassed and the franchise was embarrassed, and she committed herself to find basketball people to run her franchise and make it just not an afterthought. Because if we're being fair, the Pelicans were very much just an afterthought. The Bensons, Gail's late husband, bought the Pelicans to keep them in the city. They cared enough to keep the team in the city when there was talk of them moving. But they were never a top priority. They just had Mickey Loomis, who's done a tremendous job running the Saints, just run the Pels. Well, you're not going to get anywhere really that way. and they let apathy set in the front office. But the embarrassment of what occurred last season after the trade request by Anthony Davis's agent changed everything. And you can feel it. And someone like Drew Brees feels it too. And he feels, finally, there's someone here that's going to that I can pass the torch to. Now, look, he may also be passing the torch on his own team. He may pass the torch once he retires to guys like Alvin Kamara or Michael Thomas or even Cam Jordan, right? There's other guys on the Saints that he could pass the torch to. And there's also nothing saying that once Drew retires that the Saints will still not, you know, that the Saints will still be the number one attraction in town for sports fans. You know, this is very much a football state. New Orleans is a football city. But the Pels could make significant inroads. Look how many season tickets are being sold. Reminds you a little bit of what happened with the Saints when they came back to the Superdome and all of a sudden they sold out for season tickets for the first time in their history. And they've sold out ever since. 2 years ago, when the Pels made a trip to the playoffs and upset the Portland Trailblazers in the first round, you could drive go-karts around the arena and not hit anyone. And they were winning. And they had Anthony Davis. And they had Boogie Cousins. That's not going to be the case this coming year. And they're going to be young, and they may even miss the playoffs because of that youth. But there's a level of excitement. And for Brees to have that gesture, to not only welcome Zion Williamson, which in itself would probably be a tremendous honor for a kid that's 19 years old, right? Here's Drew Brees. This is a guy that's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of the game. And, he signed a jersey, and it's framed, and it's left here for me. But then you walk up to it, and it says, to Zion, passing the torch to you, who dat? It's almost like a challenge from another competitor, an old veteran competitor, but a challenge to you to say, hey, young man, welcome. We love you. We're happy that you're here, but you're going to have to step your game up on and off the court and become the face of professional sports in this city. Because that's what number 9 has been for not only New Orleans, but for the state of Louisiana and for the Gulf Coast region. And he is ready to pass the torch down to the young man out of Duke, who the New Orleans Pelicans selected number 1 overall last Thursday, in Zion Williamson. Pretty impressive. Pretty impressive and pretty interesting. But you'd expect something like that from Drew Brees. And the fact that Zion accepted the gift and seems to be the guy that's going to thrive on this, he's going to be the positive face. He's going to be the guy with the 1,000-watt smile that kids are going to love, but his game is going to be absolutely filthy. And you can be both, and Brees has proven that you can be both. You can be a nice guy. You can be the guy who stays late and signs autographs and takes pictures with fans and does all the community charitable work. And then you can be an absolute beast on the field. Zion can be that way too. He can become the beloved New Orleans Pelicans player then, but also be one of the fiercest competitors on the hardwood there inside the Smoothie King Center. And obviously Drew Brees thinks he can do it, or he wouldn't have done the gesture like he did. So we'll see. I love the gesture, though. And we'll see if Zion can live up to those expectations. It's daunting, let's be honest. It's daunting, but the young man from Duke seems to be up for the challenge of being the face of this franchise and to be the leader and the face of professional sports in the city and the state and the entire Gulf Coast. Can't wait to see this young man's career take off and take flight. right here in our state. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll wrap up hour number one right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. The LSU caravan made its final stop two nights ago down in Metairie. We talk a lot about what Coach O had to say on yesterday's show, but I want to touch on what Joe Brady had to say. Now, remember, Joe Brady was hired in the offseason. He served as an offensive assistant coach under Sean Payton for the New Orleans Saints, worked with Drew Brees for a couple years. And he's been brought in to help modernize, would be the best way to describe it, make the LSU offense more up-tempo. They like Steve Ensminger. They like what he was able to do last year, but they want the offense to be more dynamic, more no huddle, more spread. And we've heard this for years, right, when it comes to the LSU offense. But the hiring of Joe Brady, a young, dynamic, young coach, is very much a step in the right direction. And this guy comes from the NFL. And all the reports have been guys like Joe Burrow and a lot of the other offensive skill position guys are very excited about what he's bringing to the table, the new wrinkles, so to speak, to the Tigers' offense. Now, they didn't show any of this during spring ball, as expected, because it's spring ball. But Joe Brady has challenged a certain position group to be able to have success with this new offense, and that's the wide receivers. Joe Brady said, quote, "This team is going to go as the receivers go," end quote. That's when the first-year passing game coordinator spoke about his offensive philosophies during the LSU caravan in Metairie on Monday night. Because what LSU fans and everyone's been promised is that new look, up-tempo, no-huddle, run-pass option offense. Brady says the basic goal is to get the football into playmakers' hands in space and let them do the work. In the offense's basic form during the spring game there at Tiger Stadium, a total of 9 receivers had at least 2 catches for more than 20 yards receiving, which shows off the long-promised new-look offense of slant routes and 4 and 5 wide receiver sets. Brady said this, quote, "When you can get the ball out fast, it limits what the defense can do." Pretty straightforward. Obviously, LSU has to do something about giving up as many sacks as they did across the offensive line. That's a question mark heading into the season. They're going to be salty on defense. They got very good wide receivers, good running backs, good quarterback, offensive-minded guy now added to the staff, young, dynamic offensive guy added to the staff, rather. But it's going to fall on those wide receivers. And Joe Brady's not wrong. This is what Brady also said. It's just not the guys lining up in the slot or out on the edge. Quote, "Running backs are here to run the ball and catch passes," end quote. They're not, quote, "They're not signed to play at LSU because they're dynamic blockers. That's what offensive linemen are for. Are they going to have to do it? Yes. But the more we can get them in the routes, the more defenses limit the packages they can do and allows us to do what we have to do," end quote. So Joe Brady's challenging the wide receivers. He's also challenging his running backs to be better pass catchers. That gives you a little bit of an indication what he expects this offense to do in the 2019 season. I love Joe Brady challenging his wide receivers and his running backs. That's going to do it for hour number one here on RP3 and Company. We'll be back after this on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Good morning. Welcome to hour number two here of RP3 and Company on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's 24 hours of sports coverage. free over the air. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We led off today's show talking about the College World Series. Vanderbilt storms back. Well, they didn't storm back. They just came right out, had their freshman phenom come out, set the tone early. Got the win last night, 4-1 over Michigan to even the series. And now the College World Series championship round is tied at one game apiece. A deciding game three will be tonight on the mothership. Michigan's trying to win their first national championship since 1962 and the Big Ten's first national championship since 1966. Vandy, meanwhile, is trying to win their first national championship since 2014, so not nearly as long. We talked a lot about that and how I feel like Michigan has the better matchup tonight because they have not one but two pitchers raring to go. We'll have to see, though. We'll recap all of that on tomorrow's edition of the show. Not only that, we also talked about the passing of the torch for Drew Brees to Zion Williamson as Drew Brees signed, autographed a New Orleans Saints jersey, framed it, and then told Zion in the little message on the jersey, passing the torch to you. Which I just love. It's just a great kind of elder statesman of the game, embracing the younger guy, not only welcoming him to New Orleans, saying, hey, welcome to the city, young fella. By the way, it's time to get to work. I love that. It's a classic Drew Brees moment of acceptance. Welcome to the family. Now we got to get to work, because there's no one that's better at it. No one that's better at it. No one that's better at accepting the challenge, but also putting in the work, which you got to love. I love the fact that Drew did that. But it's time now for us to talk a little bit more of Zion Williamson and the New Orleans Pelicans as we welcome on our first guest of today's show. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. It's time now for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Welcome on our next guest. He is the New Orleans Pelicans beat writer for the Times-Picayune and NOLA.com. It's the one and only Andrew Lopez. Lope, how you doing this morning, brother?
Doing pretty good, man. I'm finally glad that I can call Zion Williamson an actual New Orleans Pelican now instead of, oh, they will draft him. So I'm kind of glad that that part's over with.
I could imagine. Look, I know you flew up to Brooklyn to be at the Barclays Center last week for the draft. You know about the energy that was back home in New Orleans for the entire draft night. What was it like there in the building with the Pels, not only taking the number one overall pick, but taking two more picks in the first round?
It was kind of funny. It was a little hectic because every time, the picks were kind of spaced out just right. So whereas you finish with one guy, we finished talking to Zion. I think actually we were actually talking to Zion when he did his little one-on-one with the local media who were there when Jackson Hayes was picked. And I think when we were finished talking to Jackson Hayes is when we walked out and Nikhil Alexander Walker was picked. So it was kind of funny to me to kind of watch it all go down in that way. But it was an interesting energy. I mean, the Nets were obviously in the building. The Knicks fans were in the building. So it was a nice experience.
We're on with Andrew Lopez of NOLA.com and the Times-Picayune here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, we knew it was going to be a done deal with Zion Williamson. It was just a formality, so to speak. But the Pels were shopping around that pick. Walk me through everything that you were hearing. Why did they settle with Atlanta? Why was that the deal that they decided to go with instead of maybe trading the pick for a mid-tier player Instead, they went with the draft picks. Why?
So they were kind of looking for the best overall deal, and I think what you end up getting in that deal that you did take was you were able to not only get two players who can probably help you this year, you get a guy who could help you down the line in Didi Luzada, the Brazilian that you picked with 35, and then maybe most importantly, you got off the Solomon Hill's contract. You now have $31 million in cap space that you can use this year. If you decide to use that on a player, you know, that's fine. If you decide to use that as a, hey, I'm going to take on, you know, somebody else's cap space, you know, you can do that as well. I mean, somebody else's bad contract. So, you know, hey, you send me a couple more picks or something like that, I'll take a veteran from you. So there's a lot that they can do, and they can maybe keep it into the season. They can maybe keep it into next year. You know, if you decide to keep Brandon Ingram, you're going to have to give Brandon Ingram a nice size deal next year. So it's going to be interesting. I think they maybe use a little bit of it this year, or if they do go and spend big, probably I see it being a situation where it's probably like, you know, like a 1 year, kind of like how J.J. Redick signed, I think, with the 76ers. It was like a 1 year deal, but it was, you know, a lot of money. So maybe you go after a big like that. With a lot of money, who kind of just kind of be a stopgap kind of guy.
Andrew, let's talk about the three picks that they selected in the first round. We know how great Zion is. He is seemingly embracing New Orleans and the state of Louisiana and the Gulf Coast, and the city of New Orleans, Louisiana, and the Gulf Coast is embracing him even more so than they did Anthony Davis. Why is that?
I think it's just because he's been so outwardly trying to accept the city. I think that does play a really big role in this. You know, we kind of heard it a lot in the last couple of days, but it really is true. If you like and embrace New Orleans, New Orleans will love you back. And that's what he's doing right now. I mean, he had the comment the other day, you know, that this is home comment, you know, when you're looking out his window. There's just so much about the kid that he's got a personality. And, you know, AD was a great player. Let's not try to hide that fact. AD was absolutely a great player. But right now what you're seeing is, you know, the personality level is just completely different. And when you see it with Zion, I mean, it's genuine. I mean, he definitely means it. So I think New Orleans fans see that, and they're willing to kind of go along with that for now.
We're talking with Andrew Lopez of the Times-Picayune and NOLA.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, let's go to the second pick they got. You know, the big fella, Jackson Hayes, a huge wingspan. He's a little rail thin out of Texas. He plays the traditional number five spot. He's going to be your center. But he needs some grooming. He needs some development. What did you think of that pick? And do you believe the Pelicans are going to go after a free agent to kind of mentor him and help bring him along?
Yeah, I definitely still think they go after a five at that spot. I mean, obviously they have to with Okafor who can pair next to Zion, but Jackson Hayes is he's an athletic kid. I mean, he's a guy who at, you know, nearly 7 feet tall and 220 pounds can, you know, do windmill dunks from the free throw line. He is a supremely athletic. I think he shot 72-point-something% last year. You know, he didn't take that many jumpers, but he did shoot 74% from the line. He does have the added touch there. He's a guy who was kind of a late bloomer. He definitely didn't think that he was going to be the guy to be the number eight pick in the draft. If you're looking at, you know, a lot of people have come out with 2020 mock drafts, you know, so far this year. I mean, this is a guy who didn't even start every game at Texas. I think he started like 21 out of 32. It took him a while to come along, but when he did, you know, you saw that potential that, you know, obviously made him a lottery pick. So I definitely think he can be, you know, a piece moving forward. I don't necessarily see him playing, you know, 30 minutes this year for this team, but I definitely see him kind of in the future being a guy who can definitely make an impact.
And what about the other first-round pick, the young man they took out of Virginia right. Tech, the point guard, Alexander Walker? A little bit of surprise because you trade for Lonzo Ball, you have Drew Holiday, and you have Josh Hart, so you already have three guys under the age of 30 and two guys under the age of 24 at the guard spot. Why did the Pels feel like they needed to get yet another young guard?
You know, for Alvin Gentry's offense, he wants as many playmakers as possible, and this kind of just fits right there. you know, Nikhil Alexander Walker, he's the cousin of Shea Gilgeous Alexander, who he's an all-rookie selection, I think, for the Clippers this year. So he's got that bloodline in him. He's got that, that at next level. I had a college coach who was unaffiliated with him, didn't coach in his conference, didn't do anything, wasn't really a part of him, but, you know, had a guy who told me, you know, he's got that it factor. He's going to be a surprise. So he'll end up probably, I think, getting more minutes than he'll get more minutes, I think, than Jackson Hayes this year. But to me, it's all about, you know, developing those wings and having as much as you can get out of those guys as possible. And, you know, his assist percentage jumped this year. He went from being a guy who I think averaged like 1.6 as a freshman to I think 4 or 4.2 as a sophomore. So he can distribute the ball as well. And when you're Alvin Gentry, you want as many playmakers as absolutely possible.
We're talking with Andrew Lopez of the Times-Picayune and NOLA.com right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, tell me a little bit about the young man they took in the second round. They did have two picks. They traded one of them away. They did keep one of them. They took a young man named Silva out of Brazil. What can you tell us about him? And is he someone that they're going to stash? Or is he someone that they're going to try to develop quickly and have on the roster for next year?
I've been told that he's going to be a stashed guy. He's going to be a stashed pick. It makes sense. He can play in Brazil. Maybe they move him someplace else. It's possible to put him on the G League team. But I think they keep him overseas, let him develop maybe another year or two before you get him into the fold, you know, in New Orleans. They kind of described him as a Brazilian Josh Hart. Obviously, you have Josh Hart on your roster now. He's 6'5". He's a wing who can do some things. He can shoot. A lot of Brazilian fans are kind of excited about this. So, to me, it's kind of a pick you thought they were going to take. I thought they were going to originally take a stash guy at 57 before the draft. But, you know, for them to kind of do what they did right there was impressive.
Andrew, so what do they do now? Do they make it a priority to try to bring some veterans in, maybe Elfrid Payton? I know they have a logjam at point guard. But could the former Raging Cajun star, who played well when healthy last year, be a guy that they try to bring back to the fold for next year?
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting move. I don't know where they're at with it right now. They do have a need for a backup point guard. Obviously, they have Lonzo, but outside of that, you really just have Drew and Frank Jackson. Obviously, you're going to start Drew, and Frank has proven that he's a little probably better at the two position, which is also where Nikhil Alexander Walker can play, which is also where Josh Hart can play. So you do need a backup point guard. Elfrid makes sense. He knows the system. He knows the city clearly. I think you can get him on a smaller deal. So I think that's a great fit if he were to come back. And I think you kind of go, I don't like saying it like this, but you go cheap at that spot and then you kind of spread out some of that cap space other places.
Talking about bringing another guy back, what about Julius Randle? He played very well, almost averaged a double-double for the Pels last year in Gentry's system. We know Gentry's high on him. Any possible way? I know he's testing free agency. Do they bring him back to the fold?
Yeah, I don't see Julius coming back. I think if you don't get Zion, I could have seen a situation where Julius Randle came back, but Julius Randle's going to look for a contract that's going to be, you know, $14, $15, $16 million for multiple years. I don't think you want to commit to that if you're the Pelicans. You have basically you don't know he's better right now, but you think you have a better version of that in Zion Williamson. Statistically wise, they'll be what and what this year, but obviously Zion projects as a much better prospect. So you kind of have that guy. And I don't think you try to mess with that if you're New Orleans.
Wrapping up here with Andrew Lopez, the Times-Picayune, NOLA.com on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, one last question. Now that they have the trade in place, it'll be finalized July 6th. They got their draft picks. They're going to be moving forward now. Who are some guys that they're going to target? I mean, we've heard reports that they're not going to go after making a big splash in free agency, that they're going to get maybe some mid-level tier guys. Who are some guys that you think could be in the mix for New Orleans to target in free agency?
Yeah, I still like Dwayne Dedman from Atlanta as a center who can rebound and shoot the three, space the floor. He's a guy who I think, you know, his first full 5 years in the league, didn't attempt a three at all, and I think he shot 216 threes last year. So he's really developed that part of his game, and he shoots it at a pretty decent clip. Once you get on the wing, you're going to look at guys who can be backups. You have Ingram. I mean, I think you can possibly put Ingram in a spot where he could be a super sub off the bench. Maybe you start maybe a lower usage guy, depending on how your starting lineup looks out. But I still think you have him to start. That's what he's here for. So to me, that's kind of where you're going with that. So Deadman is the one who I think I would go after if I'm the Pels the most, because I think he makes the most sense. Outside of if you run, I mean, obviously you can make a run at a guy like Brook Lopez. I think he stays in Milwaukee. So to me, Deadman is the guy who makes the most sense right now.
Andrew, appreciate you making time for us as always, brother. Terrific job down there for the Times Picayune and NOLA.com. And we'll be in touch with you soon, my friend.
Appreciate it, buddy.
That was Andrew Lopez of NOLA.com. The Times Picayune was able to catch up yesterday with him, taped interview for today's show. Lopez covers all things New Orleans Pelicans there. He gave us some great insight on the Pels and what they're going to do, where they're going to fit in Alvin Gentry's system, and what they're possibly going to be doing once free agency opens up this coming weekend. Free agent period will open up this coming weekend. So, great catching up with Andrew. We got to hit a break. When we come back, talk a little Houston Rockets, trying to get Jimmy Butler right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Coming up in hour number three, just a reminder, George Faust, sports director at KLF Wild, join us. Talking a little Tony Robichaux, Raging Cajuns head baseball coach, and more. We'll also get his thoughts on the Pels. And then at 8:32, we'll have Connor O'Gara on from Saturday Down South, talking all things college football, including some developments with one of the teams out of the SEC that many people feel could be a contender for the college football playoff or national championships. That's the Georgia Bulldogs. They got some things that aren't so great going on right now. So we'll have Connor help us dive into all of that. That'll be coming up in hour number three. But right now I want to talk a little bit more NBA. The Houston Rockets apparently aren't going to try to be doing a rebuild after all. Remember the talk coming out, and it's been nothing but bad talk coming out of Houston involving the Rockets after they were eliminated in the second round by the Golden State Warriors. They could not defeat a Kevin Durant-less Golden State Warriors team a year after letting the Warriors off the hook in the Western Conference Finals. There were the reports that they did some type of audit about the officiating because they felt the officiating helped cost them the game, the series against Golden State the year before, and that came out, and that seemed so petty. And then there were all the reports of Chris Paul and James Harden fighting. They can't get along. They also had the reports that the owner is looking to shake up things, that he's not happy with what's going on. Just lots of dysfunction, but there were reports coming out that they were thinking about doing a rebuild on the fly, maybe shipping out Chris Paul, maybe having to build up through the draft, maybe being aggressive, but maybe they felt like their window had closed of beating the Golden State Warriors, who they could not defeat in the playoffs. Well, with Golden State's status for next season being up in the air due to Klay Thompson tearing his ACL, he won't be back until probably March, and then Kevin Durant missing more than likely all of the next regular season, and maybe even the postseason with that ruptured Achilles. Not to mention, the Golden State Warriors have to sign both guys. They're free agents, and they're injured. So there's a lot of question marks who's going to come out of the West. with those developments, it appears that the Rockets, despite all their drama and their pettiness, by the way, that tweet about James Harden not winning the MVP in the moments after the Greek Freak gave an emotional speech winning the MVP, world-class pettiness there by the Rockets. Reports, though, now have that the Rockets are trying desperately to sign and trade for Jimmy Butler from the Philadelphia 76ers. Now, free agency starts on Sunday, and the Rockets are planning to recruit Jimmy Butler. Now, remember, Jimmy Butler started his career with the Chicago Bulls, developed into one of the best two-way players in the game, became an all-star. Things did not end well in Chicago. He goes to Minnesota. It does not end well in Minnesota. He gets traded to Philly last year and gave them a huge boost, provided leadership. That young core responded to him challenging them because he's an old school kind of player. He likes challenging guys. He'll get in your face. He'll tell you when you're doing something wrong. He's got a drive like none other. But apparently, the Rockets are planning to recruit Jimmy Butler and push the 76ers for a sign-and-trade deal, which rarely ever happens anymore, that would allow the all-star forward to join James Harden and Chris Paul in Houston. The Rockets, though, don't have the salary cap space to sign Butler, so they need the threat of the 76ers losing him for nothing to a team with the available room to motivate Philadelphia into a trade. The likelihood of that happening is going to be slim to none. I mean, Butler could get a full five-year, $190 million offer at the start of free agency on Sunday night. The 76ers could offer him a four-year, $146.5 million deal, too. So the likelihood of the Rockets pulling this off is slim to none, but they've done this in the past, so we'll see. We got to hit a break. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we're going to talk a little Houston Astros baseball right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. I'm your host of RP3 and Company, Raymond Parch III. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's 24 hours of sports coverage free over the air. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you'd like, be more than happy to talk to you today. Give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. I want to talk a little Houston Astros baseball. You know, that road trip did not go as according to plan. They nearly lost every game of the road trip, had their longest losing streak of the year. They salvaged the series against the Yankees by avoiding being swept on Sunday. They welcomed the Pittsburgh Pirates to town after taking Monday off. Yesterday, they welcomed in the Pirates in a little interleague action. And the Astros take care of business 5-1. They're now 50-30 overall on the season. And let me tell you a little bit about the lineup they threw out there. Because for the first time in a long time, George Springer, Jose Altuve, Alex Bregman, and Michael Brantley were all in the same lineup together. Springer made his debut after his rehab assignment was completed down in Corpus Christi. In his debut, or his return, rather, to the lineup, Springer Dinger went 1-for-4 on the night. Altuve, who came back a few games earlier during the road trip, was 1-for-4. He's still trying to return to form, the former league MVP. Alex Bregman, though, had himself a monster of a game. 3-for-4 with 3 runs scored. Did not get walked, which has been rare because he's drawn a lot of walks, second most in the big leagues this season. Yordan Alvarez, the young man, the 21-year-old Cuban prospect, he DH'd last night. He got himself a hit and RBI as well. And Yuli Gurriel, the Astros' third baseman, picked up a couple hits, as did Josh Reddick, who's had a fairly good season of late. The Astros' starting right fielder. Gerrit Cole was on the bump for the Stros, and he was really good. 6 innings of work, gave up only one run on seven hits, struck out three, and the bullpen came in and did their job. Josh James, a scoreless inning of work. Will Harris, the former LSU star, scoreless inning of work. And then Colin McHugh came in, the young prospect who's still trying to find his way. They got him in the bullpen now. He came in, scoreless inning of work as well. Actually, the three relief pitchers for the Stros only surrendered one hit while striking out three in three innings of work. So 50 wins for the Stros. And now they got Springer back in the lineup, and they got Altuve back in the lineup. They won't get Carrera back until after the All-Star break, more than likely. He suffered that rib injury about a month ago, and they said he was going to be out probably 6 to 8 weeks, maybe longer. They don't need to rush him back. They got Bregman playing at short, moved him over. They have him playing at short, filling in for Carlos right now. But the fact that they were able to get Altuve and Springer, who missed the better part of the last month to month and a half of the season, they have them back in the lineup before the All-Star break, and this is still a team that already has 50 wins. So they can take their time, which is great because it's still going to take Springer a little time to get to return to form. It's going to take Altuve probably longer because he wasn't right to begin with. Despite that little power outage that he had early in the season with the home runs, he wasn't hitting very well. But this team is just so loaded that it doesn't matter. Of course, it was extra motivation for Gerrit Cole because he was facing his former team. And he pitched very well. I mentioned Gurriel. He had a tremendous two-run homer. And the Astros win game one of this six-game homestand. That featured the return of not one but two players. In addition to Springer, it was also the return of Jose Altuve for the home crowd. Reddick had a tremendous catch where he robbed a home run over the field wall. You can find a photo of it online. One guy is not even fazed by it. Another guy's protecting his nachos, which is tremendous. I mean, those nachos aren't cheap, so he needs to. Bregman is tearing it up. He led off the fourth with a double. Guy's going to be in the MVP conversation. He's going to be a strong candidate. More than likely, he's probably going to finish as runner-up because Mike Trout exists. And Mike Trout's having the best career, best start to a season in his entire career, and he's already won multiple MVPs. The home run by Gurriel was his seventh of the year. And here's an interesting thing. We focus so much on Springer being back and Altuve being back, and we talk about Alex Bregman being an MVP candidate, and rightfully so. Well, I've talked a lot about the signing of Michael Brantley as a free agent in offseasons paid off huge dividends. We've talked about the 21-year-old Cuban prospect, Alvarez. This lineup is filthy. But Gurriel is a huge part of this team and this team's success. Here's a stat for you. The Astros are 28-1 over their last 29 games and 40-2 overall in their last 42 games in which Yuli drives in a run. So when he is getting guys across home plate, the Astros are essentially unbeatable. 28-1 over their last 29 games and 40-2 in their last 42 games in which Yuli Gurriel drives in a run. That tells you everything that you need to know of how important he is to what the Houston Astros are doing. Terrific performance once again by Cole. The bullpen looked good as well. Springer being back now before the All-Star break is needed for the Astros. Yes, they're at 50 wins. But the leadoff spot has been a struggle when he was on the injured list. Astros leadoff hitters were hitting 177 since Springer went on the IL, with that average being the second worst in Major League Baseball over that span. So having Springer back and having him hopefully return to form, so to speak, will be key for the Astros moving forward. Once again, their leadoff hitters were batting less than 200 while Springer was out, and yet the Astros, here we are in the middle of June, late June, and they're already at 50 wins. They missed Jose Altuve for nearly 2 months. The former league MVP, the heart and soul of this team, still at 50 wins. Carlos Correa, who was playing at an MVP level, all-star, goes on the IL. They're still at 50 wins. This is just how immensely stacked this team is. Cole did get earned the win in his first start against his former club, tossing six innings of the one-run ball. It was also a nice return for Colin McHugh, as I mentioned, striking out one in a scoreless ninth inning. He had been banged up and also had been sent down to kind of refocus himself. He's a talented young man, but he still has to kind of bring it all together. The Astros play the middle game of the series with the Pirates tonight. Framber Valdez will be taking the bump. Valdez was roughed up by the Yankees in his most recent start, lasting only 3 1/3 Thursday in that 10-6 loss. He's 3-3 on the year with an ERA of 3.61. You can listen to that game live right here tonight on 103.7 The Game. We're going to take care of you. The Jordy Holberg Show will be on from 2 to 4 as normal. Then the good brother, Ben Love, host of Bumper to Bumper Sports, will start at 4 o'clock. He will take you to 6, and then at 6 o'clock it will be Five Guys, Stories and Lies, and our award-winning show will go from 6 to 7:10. So there'll be no Astro launch tonight. Five Guys will go from 6 to 7:10. They'll lead you right into first pitch between Game 2 of the Pirates versus the Astros right here on 103.7 The Game. The third game of this series will be day baseball right here on Thursday on 103.7 The Game. So here we are. Today is officially going to be the halfway point of the season, of the regular season, of course, and the Astros have 50 wins. 50 wins already. And the impressive thing about that is, I've already talked about Altuve being on the IL for nearly 2 months, Springer being on the IL for a month. They still have Correa on the IL. He won't be back until after the All-Star break. So you have three of your top five best hitters on the team, they've been shelved. They've missed at least a month of the season each. Still found a way to get to 50 wins. Verlander has been lights out. We've talked about it on the program. He's playing at a Cy Young Award winner level this year, already to 10 wins, despite giving up a rash of home runs, but they're all been solo shots. It's kind of a quirky stat. Gerrit Cole has pitched very well. But right now, the Astros really don't have a number three and number four guy. They're still trying to find the back end of the rotation. The bullpen has been suspect from time and time. Okay? So, the fact that this team is still where it's at is phenomenal. Reminder, later today, the All-Star Game starters gets underway. The voting period gets underway. It's going to be 28 hours. They'll start at noon Eastern, so 11 our time, and will end on Thursday at 3 o'clock our time. So the voting for the All-Star Game starters will begin today and will last for a 28-hour period. So if you're a diehard Astros fan or if you're a diehard Atlanta Braves fan like myself, you need to make sure to go online and make sure to get your vote on. Where are we standing right now in the Major League Baseball standings? Well, the Yankees are atop the American League East, 51-28 overall. The Minnesota Twins, which have been the surprise team of the season, they're 51-27. Remember, early in the season, they came into, the Astros played them at Target Field there in the Twin Cities, and Minnesota roughed up the Astros, won that series, and we're like, what the hell is Houston doing losing to the Minnesota Twins? Well, it looks like the Twins are legit. We're about to be at the All-Star break, and they are the best team in the American League Central. It's not even close. They're 8.5 games up on the Cleveland Indians. And they also have the best record in the American League. The Astros sit atop the American League West as expected, 50-30 overall. Their lead over the Texas Rangers, though, is now down to 6.5. That road skid that they just came off of, the Rangers were able to gain some ground on them. But the Astros still hold a 6.5 game lead over the Texas Rangers, their rival. In the National League, the Atlanta Braves sit atop the National League East standings. They're 5.5 games up on the Philadelphia Phillies. The Chicago Cubs are the Fighting Cody Schutzes. They lead the National League Central by one game over the Milwaukee Brewers and only 2.5 on St. Louis. The NL Central is going to be a dogfight down the stretch. All three of those teams could win that division. And Atlanta is going to have its hands full with Philadelphia as well. The team with the most wins in the big leagues, the best team in the big leagues right now, resides in the National League West Division. That's, of course, the Los Angeles Dodgers. They're 55-26 on the year. They are a full 13 games up in their division on the Colorado Rockies. That's what we call a comfortable lead. But the Astros, they're taking care of business. They lead their division. They have a comfortable lead in their division. They're one of the best teams in the American League, and they're getting healthy at the right time. Altuve's back. Springer's back. Carrera will be coming back as well after the All-Star break. They're winning games, and they're getting healthy at the same time. You can't beat that if you're a Houston Astros fan. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll wrap up hour number two right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on Stadium Sports Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air, 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Coming up in hour number three, we got not one but two guests for you. Connor O'Gara will be joining us at 8:32. He is the senior featured columnist from Saturday Down South. He's going to break things down concerning the world of the SEC, some developments going on with the Georgia football program to take note, plus much, much more. So he'll join us, break all that down for us. To lead off hour number three will be the one and only, the Dean Kane, king of Acadiana sports media, the one and only George Fowle, sports director at KOFY. He'll share his thoughts about Tony Robichaux, the longtime UL baseball coach who suffered a heart attack on Sunday night, had a needed procedure on Monday. Reports are that he's going to expected to make a full recovery. So we'll talk to George about Tony and his impact, not only with the Raging Cajuns baseball program, but his impact in the community of Acadiana in general. Once again, we led off today's show talking about the College World Series. Game three will be tonight. And it all depends on who you want to root for here. You got on one hand the Cinderella team, the team who was one of the last four programs to earn a berth into an NCAA regional. They had to do it the hard way, had to win a couple games in its own conference tournament just to get into the NCAA regional. Takes care of the regional host, has to face them three times, wins two games. Everyone says that's a great story. They move on to the next level, the super regionals. There's no way that Michigan is going to take down UCLA, the top number one overall seed in the entire bracket. There's no way. They're Bruins. They're at home. They're in L.A. Sure enough, Michigan faces them three times, takes care of business, wins two of three, wins the super regional to advance to the College World Series for the first time in years. But then everyone said, hey, it's going to come to an end for Michigan. Yeah, it's great you got here. But look at the Cinderella story of Florida State. They got there, too, in Mike Martin's final year, his 40th year at the helm of the Seminoles. But they got eliminated. It's a nice story, but you're not really a contender. And then what does Michigan do? They didn't lose a game until last night. So here are the Wolverines once again. Backs against the wall, taking on a higher-rated an opponent that people feel should smoke them. And they got not one but two pitchers that are thrown out there tonight. So you can root for the underdog, the Cinderella story, or you can root, if you want to rep the SEC, Vandy. They're trying to win their first national championship since 2014. They're a perennial power. They started off the season ranked number one or number two with LSU. So if you want some SEC pride, you want the perennial favorite, you want the marquee program to win, then you'll be rooting for Vandy tonight. Either way, a champion will be crowned in Omaha for the 2019 college baseball season. We'll recap it all on tomorrow's show right here on RP3 and Company. That's going to do it for hour number two. Coming up, we're going to talk with George Faust of KLFY right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Good morning. Welcome to hour number three here of RP3 and Company on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parks III. I'm broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's 24 hours of sports coverage free over the air. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We left off today's show talking a lot about the College World Series. Game 3 will be tonight, Michigan versus Vandy. We also touched on Drew Brees passing the torch to Zion Williamson. And we covered a slew of other topics. But right now, it's time for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest. It's been a while since we've had him on there, so we got to welcome him back in style. He is the Dean Cain, King, Prince, whatever title you'd like to give him, El Presidente of Acadiana Sports Media. It's our good friend, the sports director from KLFY, the one and only, George Faust. Fausty, how you doing this morning, brother?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing great, man. Doing great. Wanted to have you on the show. It's been a little while, but I thought with the news that came out on Monday concerning one of the most iconic coaches in the state right now, regardless of what sport, it was no better time than now to have you on, brother. When you heard the news about Tony Robichaud having suffered a heart attack and had to have a procedure to repair it on Monday, what were some of the thoughts that went through your head?
Well, the biggest thing was I had just finished interviewing him for Inside Cajun Nation, and so we did a taped interview for our show Inside Cajun Nation,
right?
And that was we actually did that on Thursday. So when I found out, I was like, oh my goodness, it probably happened while he was watching himself on TV, you know. I was like, oh my god, like I didn't hear anything about it till Monday, and I was so nervous that something like he first off, I was so relieved that he was okay, or that he had survived it, and then I was just shocked because I had just talked to him and had a great conversation with him. We talked about baseball. We talked about life. You know, the best part of interviews a lot of times is not the stuff that goes on. That's where you build your relationship with people. And so that's kind of what happened in this case is, you know, we were talking about, it wasn't so much what everybody got to see on Inside Cajun Nation, but, you know, afterwards when we're walking him out to back to his car, you know, we're chatting about life and, you know, what his sons are doing, you know, and what my son is doing. And, you know, I'm asking coaching advice from him and stuff like that. And, so those are the moments, and those are the moments that you're like, wow, you know, this person is more than just a coach. He's a person who's affected many lives, and you can see that by the outpouring of emotion from the players.
Right, and George, I saw that too. Just a wave of people kind of reaching out via social media and everything, and they just an outpouring of support. For Robe, right. And you know, and we joke all the time about the Robeisms, right? About, you know, he's great.
We talked about that too.
He's great with the press conferences, and he just gets after and he gives us all those great Robeisms. Were you surprised at all of just the? I mean, I guess maybe not surprised is the right way to frame it, George. But I guess it must have been great to see so many former players via social media or talking with you or reaching out to people just on what the Coach Robe has meant to them and to the community.
Well, see, you know, it's funny because I actually asked him on Thursday when we taped the interview for Sunday night, I actually asked him about, you know, longevity and being able to sustain in a business that's ever changing the business of this college baseball. And his answer was quite interesting because he's like, you're not, if you're only coaching the kid for those 4 years, you know, and you're coaching him to get just whatever's out of the baseball out of him, then you're not doing that player, that person a service. You're doing him a disservice. And just goes to show the way Coach Robes is. He was more worried about, all right, so this guy's playing for me for 4 years, but I need to teach him life lessons for when he is finished. And every player, former player that I've talked to so far, talking about Coach Robe, every one of them says the same thing about, look, you know, yeah, I played for him, and I might not have hit the field every time, every game or whatever, or maybe I did, but the key was for him to instill in us that, hey, we need you to be a better man than you are a baseball player. And I'm trying to teach you not only baseball, but I'm teaching you life lessons. And I hate to use the word legacy because he's still around. Thank goodness, but yeah, that's what he wants his. That's how you're going to be able to gauge if he was a good coach. And we brought up, we were actually talking about Mike Martin a little bit from Florida State. He did it for what, 40 years?
40 years, Faust.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, and I asked Coach Robes. I said, man, that's a long time, and you've done it a long time as well. And he goes, well, you know, it's the same thing. It's the same situation. You're not just trying to build a baseball player. You're trying to build a better man, a better person, a person that can handle adversity when it comes to him in real life, where, you know, you have an issue that happens, or, you know, maybe you lose a child, or maybe you, you know, you have to go through an illness or something like that. How do you react in those moments? That's going to be a better gauge of my job of coaching, is whether or not they can handle that. And I think it's real. That's the kind of guy you want your kid to play for. You know, a guy who's going to push him on the field, but's going to make him better when it comes to things off the field as well.
We're talking with George Faust, KLFY sports director, right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. George, you know, you've got to know Robe a little bit over the years, covering him since he's been at UL, and this guy, this man's been doing it for quite a long time. He's not quite 60 yet, but he's been coaching for 30-plus years. How much longer do you think Coach Robe is going to continue to coach? Because he still seems to have a passion for not only coaching but also helping these young men become men. So how much longer could you see Coach Robe continue coaching the Raging Cajuns?
I mean, as long as his health holds up, I think he'll be here for a little bit longer. It's funny because at the beginning of the season, we had a chance to talk to him, and he was talking to eventually, you know, whenever he's done, he was talking about maybe retiring at some point, not anytime soon that I knew of. And he was talking about writing a book, and you know, it'd be really interesting to get a hold of that book, you know, because we asked him if there was going to be any like a section of Robisms in there, and you alluded to it, and those things. It's funny because you brought it up, and I brought it up to him in the interview as well about, you know, like, how did those come about? Like, you know, I think I said on TV, I said something like the blinders on a bull. And I think it's a mule. So I misspoke about that. But blinders on a mule. And he's like, you know, things like be a thoroughbred, not a loaf of bread. He's like, basically, and I threw this out there. I said, you're just trying to tell them, you know, trying to instruct them and give them a visual picture of what they need to do to make it better. And it comes out in a Robism, in a creative, interesting manner. Like he says, yeah, you throw a curveball in practice right here, and you're getting this guy out. But in the game, if you hang that curveball, and you'll buckle the knees of the batter. And then he says, but if you throw a curveball like that and hang it, you're going to buckle the knees of one of the squirrels up in the pine trees back there. And so there are different things like that, you know. All those things, what he was saying is it's basically common sense, but put to a player to help them improve their game. And so everything he's saying, I mean, they're classic, right? I mean, the blinders on a mule thing is probably one of my favorites. Got to put the blinders on a mule again because it's so true. It's so true in life. That's such a true statement in life. You know, you can sit back and look at your big picture and go, wow, I don't know how I'm going to do this. Or you can just turn the page and look at one page and then get to the bottom of that page and turn it in your life and go, all right, there it is. Okay, I'm doing that. And then you turn around and look back and you've gone through 100 pages of your life or whatever it is, and you're like, oh, I accomplished something because I kept the blinders on the mule and I didn't look up. And at the end of the day, or the end of the game, end of the race, whatever it is, you look up and you look back and you go, wow, I did some things. And that's when you can reflect, not in the middle of it. And that's the way sports is, whether it's baseball, football, you know, you don't look at the scoreboard. You know, you hear football coaches say that all the time. Don't look at the scoreboard till the game's over. Basketball coaches say the same thing. So, baseball is such a mental game. And he's such a great mental coach. He believes in the mental aspect of it, and it's huge. It's huge, and so that's why where his expertise is so very well documented and helpful to his players.
We're talking with George Faust, sports director at KLFY here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Faust, I want to switch over to the New Orleans Pelicans. You rep the city of New Orleans. We know this. That's where you're from, and we won't hold it against you that you left the state and went and attended Ole Miss. But that said, brother, I want your opinion as a guy that's a native of New Orleans. The energy, the excitement level around Zion Williamson and the Pels right now is something I've never seen before. you being from New Orleans, have you ever seen this before when it comes to pro basketball?
Not pro basketball. Yeah, you said it pretty right. I mean, the excitement level is through the roof. On a scale of 1 to 10, it's probably a 15. Just because the expectation, and while those are big, I mean, it's the outlook, and it's, you know, people in New Orleans want to share the culture, want to share their style. And when a guy like Anthony Davis comes in and he's excited about it, and then he basically throws all that goodwill out the window with the way he ended his career, you know, people like, you know what, it's kind of like, go ahead and leave. People are kind of like, go ahead and leave. It's kind of like when Eric Gordon was in Phoenix and the Pelicans were going to trade for him or whatever, bring him over, and he goes, I don't want to go to New Orleans. Well, then everybody in the city's like, you know what, we don't want you here. You don't want to be here. You don't want to experience what we got. We know what we got is great in this state, in South Louisiana, in New Orleans. It's a unique thing. And Drew Brees has said it time and time again. Man, you come in, this city will love you. And then if you'll let that city, they'll embrace you. And, I mean, look, money is green whether you're in L.A., New York, New Orleans. You know, the money is the same color. You know, like, it doesn't matter if you're playing in New Orleans, Milwaukee, or Charlotte. You get a max contract. It's a max contract. You know, you can win a championship. If Milwaukee can win a championship in basketball, New Orleans for sure can. And just because you're in a big city, I think that's the biggest misconception by people who don't live in quote unquote flyover states. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think the excitement level, to get back to the original question, I think Zion's going to find out, and he's doing that right now, that you know, if you open your heart to New Orleans, they'll take you in and love you. And to be honest, that's everywhere in Louisiana. That's the way this culture is down here. And so, you know, you saw Drew Brees left him an autographed jersey in his hotel room and said, I'm passing the torch, or something like that, or time for you to take the torch, or whatever it
says. Yeah, George, I wanted to ask you that because Brees made it a point, and I talked about it earlier on the show, where he had a framed jersey, he signed it, and he said, I'm passing the torch to you, who dat? How surprised were you that Brees decided to do that, and what do you think that says about how Brees and maybe the Saints feel about Zion and what he can do for the city?
I hope Drew reaches out to him and actually talks to him as well, not just sends him because I think if Drew Brees can get to a kid, you know, a young kid. I mean, look, Drew came here and, you know, it was right after Katrina, the city was in shambles. Now, I mean, this young man who's got unbelievable basketball talent is here, and he can, if Drew can talk to him and say, look, I want a championship here, you can do the same thing. This city's going to love you. Even if you don't bring them a championship, they're still going to love you. Look at Archie Manning. You know, he can just kind of give him a little bit of insight. I'm sure at some point they'll come across each other. The facilities are in the same building, you know. They're right next to each other. So I have a feeling they'll come across each other at some point. But, you know, I thought it was great that Drew did that, and I think that shows how much players like playing for now Miss Gail Benson, and that, you know, Zion can kind of feel like, all right, hey, this can be my home. I can succeed here, and they're going to do everything they can to make that happen. So I was glad to see Drew do that, because he didn't have to do that. You know, he could have been like, Vandy's coach James Franklin left a note for the next coach in his desk when he left for Penn State, and it said, good luck, you're going to need it, or something like that, when he left Vandy. So it's like he could have done something like that. You know, you don't have to reach out, and he did, and I think that shows, one, a lot of character about Drew, two, how good it is to be playing in a market that's going to love you. most likely, even if you don't succeed. I mean, there'll be tough times if you don't succeed, but people aren't going to, you know, the scrutiny will be a lot less than if you're in New York, L.A., or Chicago. You know what I mean? So I think it was great that Drew did that.
Fausty, appreciate you making time for us. As always, my friend, keep up the good work. And we'll talk to you soon, my friend. Have a great summer.
You too, man. We'll talk to you soon. Have a good one.
That's George Faust, longtime sports director there at KLFY, joining us talking about Tony Robichaux, his impact here on the community, as well as touching on the New Orleans Pelicans. We got to hit a break, but more RP3 and Company coming up next, right after this, on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can also find us on the simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's 24 hours of sports coverage free over the air. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you'd like, you can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Just wrapped up a good conversation with our friend George Faust of KLFY about the impact that Tony Robichaux has on the local community. Once again, if you haven't heard, the longtime skipper of the Raging Cajuns baseball team suffered a heart attack on Sunday night, had a procedure done on Monday, and is expected to make a full recovery. Once again, we send out our thoughts and prayers to Robe's family, as well as the extended Raging Cajun family. There's been an outpouring of support and well wishes from former players, and not only just baseball players, but just former players and students there at UL. So it's always tremendous to see that. And it also, you know, kind of puts things in perspective and shows you just the impact a coach, a good coach, can have on someone in their development. And I'm just not talking about sports. You know, Tony has always prided himself on developing these boys into young men. Go to any press conference, he mentions it. That's kind of his mantra. Yes, having the success on the field and taking the Raging Cajuns to their first ever appearance in the College World Series, which he's done, having them appear in regionals and super regionals, winning hundreds of games, all that's important. That's what he gets paid to do. But Tony, and he started this early in his career when he's the skipper there for the McNeese State Cowboys, has always prided himself on helping make these young boys and turning them into men. And he's tough. He's a tough coach. He demands a lot, he expects a lot, and he doesn't tolerate foolishness. I've talked to several players over the years. I remember talking to former STM star Hogan Harris a few years ago. And Hogan was a very good pitcher at STM, helped them win a state championship. He goes to UL, and he was humbled, but in the best way possible. As he told me, he says, I thought I knew exactly what I was doing. I thought I knew how good I was and that I was ready to play college ball. And then I woke up for my first 6 a.m. practice in the fall my freshman year, and I realized I was not ready for this. Tony's hard on those guys, but he has to be a lot of times because they need a kick in the butt and they need some tough love. But Tony loves his guys. He does. And that's why you've seen just the outpouring of support for the Raging Cajun skipper. Can't wait to see him back. And for me, I think he will coach as long as he wants. Tony, that's what drives Tony. Not the wins, not getting to the College World Series, not getting to a Super Regional or NCAA Regional. What drives Tony Robichaux and what prompts him for all those robisms is the bond he has with the young man in coaching boys into young men. and he still has a fire. He has just as much of fire in his belly for that right now as he did 30 years ago. And as long as he has that, that man will coach for another 10, 15, 20 years if he wants. We got to hit a break. When we come back, we'll talk to Connor O'Gara of Saturday Down South, all things college football, right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over the air 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We had a tremendous show today. Talked a lot of NBA, a lot of Zion Williamson in New Orleans. We've talked about Tony Robichaux. And, of course, we've spent a good chunk of time talking college, but baseball. College World Series, Game 3 will be tonight. It's time now to talk a little college football, because it's going to be here sooner than later. Only a few months away from kickoff. Anticipation is already building, and it's no better person to talk college football with for us than our good friend from Saturday Down South, the one and only Connor O'Gara. Connor, how you doing this morning, brother?
Oh, I'm doing well. I feel bad. I hear like a commercial background on the phone right now, which is, so I can't really hear you that well.
We'll take care.
There we go. Perfect.
We'll take care of that, Connor. We'll take care of that. We got Connor O'Gara here on the Arco Equipment Hotline, talking all things college football. Hey, Connor, one of the first things I wanted to talk to you about today, what is going on with the Georgia Bulldogs, in particular their wide receiving core? There seems to be a lot of dysfunction, a lot of things going on there.
Yeah, it's a dire situation right now in terms of experience. The news that we got, nice little Friday news dump from Georgia, finding out that Jeremiah Holloman, the Dogs' leading returning receiver, was going to be kicked off the team as a result of an abuse allegation an assault charge that was against him. And Kirby Smart said, "All right, you're off." And all of a sudden, you look at the Georgia receiving core, and you're like, wow, this is unbelievable, because this team doesn't have its top five receivers from last year. We talked about in the offseason how much talent they lost to the NFL draft with the likes of Terry Godwin, Mecole Hardman, Riley Ridley, Isaac Nada, these guys that we've just come to expect being staples of this program, and you look around, and the numbers are bad. I mean, it's really bad when you just think about the fact that Georgia only has two wide receivers who caught a pass last year in a Georgia uniform. And everybody is talking about how, yes, they've recruited so much talent the last couple of years and all that, and they were able to get, you know, some transfers in with Demetrius Robertson, of course, from Cal, and he's expected to make a big leap up this year. And they got Lawrence Kager out of Miami, and they bring Eli Wolf out of Tennessee, the tight end. So there's expectations that they're going to be able to overcome some of these depth issues, but really the big thing is you've got a veteran quarterback, Jake Fromm, and it's about getting on the same page with him. And that's right now what they just absolutely do not have from this group. DeAndre Swift is the leading returning receiver on this team. He's a tailback. So I think that Georgia fans are looking at this wondering who's going to be the guy to step up, because somebody has to. I mean, that it's clear that there's going to need to be an alpha or two on this team. No playoff team has ever overcome having its top five returning receivers just not on the roster the following year. So, you know, this would be an unprecedented accomplishment if Georgia's able to make a playoff, which a lot of people expect them to do. But it is a major hurdle that they're going to have to overcome.
I'm talking with Connor O'Gara of Saturday Down South. He's a senior featured columnist here on the Arco Equipment Hotline. Connor, Georgia intrigues me. Not only do they have that issue with their pass catchers, but you know, I feel like, is there something going on where they're having a hangover? We saw them lose in the SEC championship game. They played uninspired ball in the Sugar Bowl versus Texas. I was there for that game. Is this just hangover from how the season ended? And do we expect Kirby Smart and his staff to be able to kind of push through that and have this team be in the mix for the college football playoff again?
You know, I'm not really a big believer in the hangover principle. I understand, like, I think it's a little bit of a different story when you look at the Sugar Bowl and try and compare it to what they're going to be able to do in 2019, just because this 2019 team has, you know, as much of a letdown as it was to lose the SEC championship the way that they did, this team has even higher aspirations, I think, to win a national championship and ultimately end this drought. And I think that this team is coming back with a renewed sense of purpose. And one of the things that, you know, people kind of make the comparisons of, you know, Kirby being the next Saban potentially in the SEC. And the thing that Saban has done so, so well throughout his career is when his team loses a bowl game or their season ends in a way that, you know, isn't winning a national championship, basically, they always come back with a vengeance. And they always come back ready to go. And four times than not, I think four of the five times that they've been knocked out in a bowl game or something like that, they've come back and won a national championship the year after that. So can Georgia do that? Can Georgia take what happened at the end of last season and say, you know what, we're going to get over the hump, and we've seen what it takes to get to the top of the college football mountain. We nearly got there in 2017. We felt like we were really close last year. We have all the tools to be able to get to that level, and there's still a lot of pieces to like with this team. They might have the best offensive line in the country. I'm such a big Jake Fromm believer in, you know, DeAndre Swift, and if Zamir White stays healthy, and all these things that are working in their favor, but it still is going to come down to those few plays with this team. And as we always talk about with Georgia, it's about finally getting it done, finally getting over that hump, and not just winning September, winning the offseason, and having this team that's loaded with so much talent. Can they get it done this year? It's going to be, in my opinion, one of the top few storylines in college football.
We're talking with Connor O'Gara here of Saturday Down South on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Connor, there's a story that you wrote, and I want to get your further insight on. You talked about how Oklahoma's been able to come into the SEC country and steal a top QB recruit, and that got you thinking about other instances that happened. Is this a trend where some of the other conferences, ACC and Big 12, are coming into the SEC's backyard and poaching top recruits?
I think, I don't know if it's so much a trend as it is the ones, and, you know, this, the Brock Vandegrift, the five-star 2021 quarterback who committed to Oklahoma, he's from Georgia, and I think a lot of people kind of look at that and go, whoa, all right, that's maybe they'd think that 10 years ago, maybe something like that wouldn't happen. But I think it's just the ones who have gotten away have been painful ones for the SEC. Jameis Winston from Alabama, Deshaun Watson from Georgia, Trevor Lawrence from Georgia. Those three right there, I mean, there's national championships, there's a Heisman winner there. I mean, you just look at all those three guys specifically and the talent that got away, and that's the frustrating thing. But in terms of the quarterback position as a whole, it's become so national with all these national showcases and stuff that a lot of these guys are, you know, not necessarily just, oh, I'm going to stay in state and go to, you know, the big time in state school. Georgia alone, I mean, the quarterback talent in that state in the 2010 decade is just unbelievable when you think about, you know, guys like Justin Fields and Jake Fromm, and you break down some of the numbers and you realize, all right, yeah, this might be significant. I mean, there are 50 total quarterbacks, top five quarterbacks from 2012 through 2021. That is top five in each of their respective classes. And 18 of those guys were from states in which an SEC school was located. And of those 18, 10 are currently enrolled at or verbally committed to non-SEC schools. Six of them went to SEC schools and two are 2020 or 2021 recruits who are undecided. So the interesting thing is, like, those six quarterbacks who were top five in their class or stayed in the SEC, three of them have since transferred. Kyler Murray, Shea Patterson, Justin Fields, pretty big names in those groups. And the guys who stayed, Felipe Franks, Jake Fromm, and then Bo Nix, of course, the true freshman at Auburn. And it's interesting because you look at something like that and you're like, wow, like, you think it'd just be a little bit more for the SEC. But I think it's just, I think a lot of this is a product of recruiting being more national. I mean, even the Pac-12, I looked at the numbers for them and it's been about 50-50 of quarterbacks who stay in the region and quarterbacks who leave the region. And the SEC has been able to have some great quarterbacks that have been from outside of the SEC and bring them in. You know, guys like Tua, guys like Will Greer, and, you know, these quarterbacks that, you know, have come in with high expectations that, you know, have turned out to be just great, great college quarterbacks. So I think it's worth keeping an eye on as this nationalization of recruiting continues to develop. And I'm not sure that it's a specific trend and that the SEC can't get top talent, but I think it's actually something worth watching. And I think somebody like Brock Vandegrift, who is from Georgia, who commits this early on to Oklahoma, and I get it, you know, two straight Heisman Trophy winners, two straight number one overall picks, but I think it's something that's worth keeping an eye on as we, you know, kind of usher in this new 2020 decade.
I'm talking with Connor Aguirre of Saturday Down South right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. So, Connor, you had an interesting article about running quarterbacks. We know Nick Fitzgerald is now gone. So the title of top rushing quarterback in the SEC is up for grabs. You had some interesting names on the list, including one that that resides in Baton Rouge. Give us your thoughts about who do you expect is going to be some of the top rushing quarterbacks in the SEC, and why do you think Joe Burrow has a great chance?
Yeah, so I put Joe Burrow at number 4 on this list, and I think a lot of people look at that, what are you talking about? That's ridiculous. But, you know, the thing that I think that the average SEC fan would probably forget is, okay, they just brought in Joe Brady to run this RPO system, and those opportunities for Joe Burrow to run are going to be a lot more prevalent in this system. And I think also, as I've talked about before, just the fact that you're having a better backup quarterback situation with Miles Brennan being healthy this year. They added more depth at the position in this offseason. And so you feel like you can take a couple more risks as opposed to last year when you really did not want to have Joe Burrow in harm's way. And we saw against A&M, he is a capable runner. I mean, that was the thing that I kept saying when he came to LSU from Ohio State. It's like, this guy can move. Like, don't get it twisted and thinking that he's just a pocket passer and he can roll out occasionally. Like, he can move pretty well, and he's the best thing, and I love his attitude on those short yard situations and how much he wants the ball in his hand. And he's like, it's just willpower. It's me versus you, and that's the mindset that Joe Burrow has. So I have him at number 4 on this list. I wouldn't be surprised if he got up to about 500 rushing yards or so, and I think that those opportunities are going to be there more so for him. And then I have Kellen Mond at number 3. At number 2, the one that I think a lot of people are still kind of in wait-and-see mode is Dylan Gatewood, just because I think there are people who think Bo Nix is going to be the starter. My guess is that Gatewood's going to be the guy. And if we're getting into a situation where it's a little bit Nick Marshall-esque with the way that this offense is run with more of a mobile threat at quarterback, which it looks like it's going to be with Gatewood or Nix winning that starting job, then I think the opportunity for him to have a big rushing season is there. Let's not forget Nick Marshall had 1,000-yard rushing seasons at Auburn with Gus Malzahn. But number 1 is Terry Wilson. And Terry Wilson is somebody that last year I criticized. I said in the middle of the season, I'm like, he needs to be more of a running threat. He needs to be more willing to take some of these chances downfield as well with his arm. But when you find out, you know, a couple weeks ago that he was actually playing through a leg injury that he suffered in the middle of the season, and you actually go back and you look at the timeline of that injury and break down his rushing numbers when he's healthy compared to when he's not healthy, it projects really well. And without Benny Snell in that offense, they're going to rely on his legs a lot more to run the ball. And I think that he's more than capable. We've seen him have some of these big breakaway plays. So Terry Wilson is the guy that I have number 1 on this list. I almost just decided to put Auburn quarterback at number 1, but Wilson gets the edge just because I love what we've seen in a small sample size from him.
We're speaking with Connor O'Gara, a senior columnist for Saturday Down South here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Connor, Les Miles, the former LSU head coach, is having himself a heck of a time on the recruiting trail at Kansas, of all places. Right now, it appears they have a top 20 class for the 2020 signing period, and they just keep getting more and more guys. What do you make of what Les is being able to do on the recruiting trail there at Kansas?
I'll admit, I was dead wrong. You know, when he decided to take this job, I think the big question that I and many others had is Les really going to have the energy to do this, to do what it takes to recruit at a place like Kansas? Because it's a different kind of effort than recruiting at LSU. And granted, you know, you can make the comparison that, well, you know, when you're at LSU, you got to compete with Bama, you got to compete with Georgia and all these big, big-time powers. But selling the Kansas vision and having to get these big-time recruits, and you're still competing with the big boys if you're getting guys of that caliber. I wasn't sure if Les was going to have that kind of motor, but I think this has given him a real second life. And, you know, it all kind of remains to be seen. Everything is always best when it's new and this thing is fresh. And we'll see how he responds if he has a 3- or 4-win season or something like that, if he still has the energy to really do this year-round recruiting cycle that's much different now than when he was at LSU. Let's not forget, early signing period just wasn't there when he was at LSU. And this is a totally new dynamic for somebody that we believe is on, you know, the tail end of his career as a coach. And, you know, I question if he's going to be able to sustain this, obviously. But for now, I give the guy credit because he's been able to do some impressive things there when he's got a lot of competition in the Big 12. And, you know, Tom Herman and Lincoln Riley, those guys are going to be gunning for some of his recruits later on in the process if they pan out in 2019. But, yeah, tip of the cap to Les, because that is not an easy thing to do to get kids to want to come to Kansas.
We're talking with Connor O'Gara of Saturday Down South here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Connor, one more question before we let you go. Interesting development with UConn deciding to – they're going to leave the American Conference and they're going to go back to being in the Big East. Obviously, the football program is going to have to – so where do you stand there? What's going to happen to the football program? And is this going to shake up some of the realignment with those lower levels as the American will have to find a team to replace UConn? Will they poach Conference USA again? Or will it be the Sun Belt? What are your thoughts on the situation there at UConn deciding to go back to a basketball conference?
What a weird turn of events, because they just unveiled this like new locker room. Everything looks all decked out. And it's like, well, you're kind of basically saying to your football program, we don't want to be competitive. We don't want to be in a conference that's better for us. And let's call what it is. I mean, you can make all the jokes about the AAC being this group of 16. I know UCF has really tried to run away with that, but just been a better football conference. And I think that if you're UConn, you're sending a tough message to your program and to boosters saying, like, hey, we're actually going to kind of downgrade this. We want to take a step back. We don't want to get whipped by the AAC. And we're going to see if we can really put all, more of our marbles into the basketball basket, because that's really what's driven this thing in years past. So, yeah, it is a weird move to see this. And I don't know if the AAC is going to, you know, they've pretty much come out and said, like, hey, if we don't find the right fit, we're not gonna fill that spot. You know, I think the biggest travesty from all of this is just that we're not gonna have the civil conflict game anymore between UConn and UCF, and that's just that breaks my heart, because that rivalry with Bob Diaco is really turning into something, you know, much like the Iron Bowl, much like the game, Ohio State, Michigan. No, I'm clearly kidding, but we know these little moments that UConn's been able to give us these last 5 years, it looks like we're not gonna get those, and they've decided we're going to be a basketball school, and that's just kind of who we are.
Connor, appreciate the insight as always, brother. Continue to enjoy your summer. We'll be in touch with you soon.
Yep, appreciate it. Sounds good.
That's Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South joining us there on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, breaking down all things college football. We got to take a break. When we come back, we'll put a bow on this edition of RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. It's been a tremendous hump day edition of RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. I want to take a moment out to thank our guest for making time for us today, Andrew Lopez from the time speaking to NOLA.com, breaking down all things New Orleans Pelicans. George Faust from KLFY, talking about Tony Robichaux, longtime skipper of the UL baseball program, as well as touching on the Raging Cajuns and the New Orleans Pelicans. Also want to thank Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South for talking all things college football with us. Reminder, programming reminder today. We're going to take care of you. Jordy Holberg, Uncle Jordy, will be on from 2 to 4 today. Then the good brother Ben Love will take over at 4 o'clock. He's going to take you from 4 to 6. Only 2 hours of bumper sports. Why? Five Guys Stories and Lies. It'll be on from 6 to 7:10. No Astro launch tonight, okay? No pregame show. Five Guys are going to take it right into first pitch at 7:10, Pirates at the Stros. So just keep it live and local all day right here on 103.7 The Game. Make sure to tune in for tomorrow's show. We'll have our good friend John Marques from The Town Talk and thetowntalk.com on. We'll have James Yasko, co-host of the Lima Time Time podcast. He'll join us talking all things Stros. And we'll have the one and only Les East from CrescentCitySports.com talking Saints and Pels. Plus, we'll recap the championship game, game number 3, College World Series. Michigan, Vandy, who do you got? I'm going with Big Blue. We'll see if I'm right on tomorrow's show. Thanks to Kevin for filling in. For Cody Schutz. Tremendous show. Y'all be safe out there. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.